the rest of the story. The colonel knew it was just a matter of time before the United States was going to be drawn into World War I. He was prepared even though he was retired. Determined that he would return to active duty, the colonel made up a list of the men he could count on, the soldiers who would accompany him in this one last glory. The moment America entered the war, he would raise his own division, have his men trained and overseas within 90 days. Well, the War Department offered only a patronizing smile. President Wilson was doing everything in his power to keep the United States out of Europe's private squabble. Surely he would succeed. But the colonel was uncomfortable on the shelf. And the extent to which he pursued his dream, well, that is the rest of the story. 1915, Woodrow Wilson was desperately trying to avoid United States involvement in the European conflict. One retired colonel, however, realized the futility of the president's efforts. The colonel already had a file on record with the Secretary of War stating that he, the colonel, could raise a division of cavalry, infantry, artillery, and engineers and have them in the front within 90 days. Diplomatically, the Secretary of War apprised the colonel that only Congress could sanction volunteer forces, but thanks anyway. Undaunted, the colonel set up headquarters in the offices of Metropolitan Magazine in New York City, and he issued a call. He would serve as major general, needed men between 20 and 30 years of age who could handle a rifle, preferring retired non-commissioned officers still physically fit. The colonel declared that he would accept no volunteers whose families would suffer financially by their absence. March 19, in the wake of three German assaults on American ships, the colonel pressed his demand to the Secretary of War once more. But once more, authorization was denied. April 2nd, President Wilson went before Congress, asked for a declaration of war against Germany. The colonel could bear it no longer. Striding up to the door of the White House, he demanded to see the president. He was told, perhaps another day. The colonel called a news conference. America must send troops to Europe as soon as possible, he said. His troops first, of course. The reporters scratched their heads. Confidently, the colonel ordered a new army hat. A friend was designated to look after his interests at home while he was fighting overseas. The colonel even wrote to Senator Henry Cabot Lodge saying that he was available to meet with the military committee or the president at a moment's notice. Well, about this time, folks began reminding the colonel of all of the bad names that he'd called President Wilson publicly. He'd said Wilson didn't have a spark of manhood, was a base demagogue, an utterer of weasel words, a hero to flub-dubs and mollycoddles. So I guess it's no wonder that President Wilson did eventually give the colonel an audience, but only for the pleasure of personally turning him down. On that occasion, the colonel was appropriately humble, but his humility was to no avail. His dream of one last glory was ended. If there is a touch of irony in the colonel's conspicuous absence from World War I, it is that he, the colonel, not many years before, had been the leader of all American forces. For the retired officer who wished only to feel the sting of battle one more time, the hapless colonel whose very presence in Europe would surely have inspired United States troops, the determined old war horse the War Department didn't want, was Teddy Roosevelt. Now you know the rest of the story.